We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Feel like Kobe in the fourth quarter.
This is the Dane Moore NBA podcast brought to you by Blue Wire Podcasts. Our presenting sponsor is BetUS, a place for you to wager on the games with the NBA finals here at BetUS. They got a great payout system, the industry's biggest bonuses, every bet type you can think of. You can join now by calling 1-800-69-BETUS or online at betus.com. 125% sign up bonus if you use the promo code Dane125. BetUS, you bet, you win, you get paid. All right, I am back with Will DeBerg, a coach here locally at the university. I feel like I have to like say what your job is every single time when we do this. Will is a coach at the University of St. Thomas. And for today's show, as Will and I have done with a bunch of these other prospects, we're just kind of going through the film of some guys who are going to be lottery picks in this draft. Today we're doing Scotty Barnes of Florida State, Franz Wagner of Michigan, and Keon Johnson from Tennessee. What's up, Bill?
How you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good. We talked a lot. I want to start with Scotty Barnes. We've talked a lot in the Cade Cunningham pod and the Jonathan Kuminga pod about the size of those guys being real weapons, what draws you to what their upside might be. And it's interesting with Scotty Barnes. I think we could talk about what his position is, but he's even bigger than those guys. He's got a little bit more length, weighs a little bit more. He's noticeably bigger. He's really more of a power forward size player in this draft, though, when we're watching this film. A lot of times he's defending out on the wing. He's doing all those sorts of things. The size comps I have are PJ Washington, Larry Nance, Kyle Anderson, Jeremy Grant, Draymond Green, Kawhi Leonard, Al-Farouq Aminu. These are guys with wingspans well above 7'3", standing about 6'7", 6'8", 6'9", and weighing, you know, in that 215 to 230 sort of range. So with all that said, when you were thinking about Scotty Barnes, I think we have to kind of frame the conversation here. Where are you just picturing him playing in the NBA positionally? What is the ideal role that you would kind of put him in if you were coaching his team?
I mean, I think that's a great question. It's funny because he's built like a four, and defensively, sure. I think watching his film, he guarded everyone at some point. So it's like watching him on defense, it's hard to really like figure out where he's going to fall there. On offense, he's built like a three or four, but he played a lot of point guard for them.
Totally.
Do you know what I mean? Especially in the tournament, the game against Michigan, I forget who they played the couple other games, but like he's bringing the ball up the court. You have Kyle Anderson on this list, and just, you know, I told you before we started recording, like they move the exact same way. So whatever Kyle Anderson is that's where I kind of, I don't know. You tell me, what position does Kyle Anderson play?
Yeah, well, I think Kyle Anderson played point guard at UCLA.
Yep.
And then I think in the NBA, what you've seen out of Kyle Anderson is those point guard skills kind of translate into being a secondary ball handler for his team. I think that the question with Scotty Barnes offensively, if he can do that, is, you know, how much respect is he going to get on the perimeter, right? Because not that Kyle Anderson is some knockdown three-point shooter, but if you're going to leave him wide open from three, he's going to take that every single time. And, you know, that's going to be a decent enough shot for the Grizzlies when Kyle Anderson does that. With Scotty Barnes, I think the whole conversation kind of starts with, you know, what are we going to think about him as a shooter? Because if he's going to be a guy who catches it above the break and just does the, your classic like 7-footer thing and just kind of pivots around and looks for someone to pass to, that's not a point guard. That's not a distributor. That's just a player out of position kind of stalling your offense. And that's a big concern that I would have with Scotty Barnes when I start thinking about him offensively. And it's why I think for me, I would be playing him at least early on in his career in the dunker spot as a four or just as my starting five. I think that's where he has to be at least early on in his career.
He has to be, because I don't know if you watched the Michigan game, his last game. They were praying that they wanted him to shoot threes. You know what I mean? And he played a lot of point guard, and you know, it's hard to do anything on offense when your primary ball handler gets no respect from the other team.
We've seen a ton of it in these playoffs, right? Giannis, Ben Simmons.
Yeah, like it's really hard to do anything. So if he's, I agree with you. I don't think, you know, maybe down the road his jumper improves, but early on, no. I don't see a world where he can be your, you know, one of your lead ball handlers.
Right. I remember when we were talking about Patrick Williams last year. I said the same thing, where you know he was just at Florida State. You know, his film wasn't great. It was this great athletic profile, and you saw the outlines of a player who, you know, might be able to develop a off the dribble sort of knockdown mid range shots type of game, really a wing. But it seemed to me with Patrick Williams that the best thing for him right away would just be like, just get him around the basket, use him as a screener, have him play with energy around the hoop. And that's not what happened in Chicago. They used him very, very much as a wing. And I think some people, again, will draw that sort of parallel. But the differentiator I would make there is, even if Patrick Williams, you know, maybe wasn't knocking down shots from like at a high clip in college, he was taking them and they looked normal, right?
Yeah.
Where Barnes just doesn't have that in his game. So we do this a lot. We're like, oh, just start him at the five. Just have him be a small, you know, be a small ball center and have him do that. And that oftentimes ends up not being the case with these guys, and they do get kind of pegged in as a wing or a four or something like that. But for me, with Barnes offensively, I don't know. It's really hard for me to visualize a role, particularly if it's a starting role, which, given where he's kind of been mocked, you think he's going to be. I don't know. It's hard for me.
What did you like offensively about him? Because I was trying to pick, like, defense is a whole different conversation. We'll talk about
that. Which is a very happy and good, yes, and he's awesome conversation.
We'll get there in a minute. Because to me, offensively, I watched more Scotty Barnes than the other two, and I kept, you know, I watched all of his offensive possessions, and it's like I just wasn't sure what, because you would think a guy at that size who can handle it fairly well but can't shoot, you would assume, I think he's this great passer, seen as though he's a you know, lottery pick, and I don't know, I didn't think he was a great passer. He was kind of just out there on offense.
Yeah, like he can pass,
yeah,
but you're not like, you're not going to make him the hub of your offense,
right,
or something, or you're not going to.
So I guess my point is, he's not a knockdown shooter. He's not this like great playmaker. So,
and he's not Bam either, as like a passing,
right,
sort
so
of five.
Offensively, I don't know.
I think
what
you're
to
just
do
hoping
him.
He's able to straight line drive, being with size, strength, athleticism, and when he catches in those situations, be able to, you know, to take guys off the dribble. I do think that some of these other things could develop. I think he could develop into somebody who you're okay with him shooting threes.
Yeah.
I do think he's someone that could really grow as a passer. And I think he has like good vision on the floor. He's obviously comfortable with the ball in his hands, which offensively, he's just going to be such a player development project, right? And I don't mean that in a bad way, because he will immediately be impactful, but who develops him and how they choose to develop him will have such an impact of who and what he becomes. Again, it's like, it's kind of the cliche example, but you know, what's Draymond Green's career arc if he doesn't wind up in Golden State next to Stephen Clay, right? Obviously he's a star player, he's probably Hall of Famer, right? But a lot of that has to do with the, you know, the construct of the environment he was kind of born into plus how he really honed the things that he was great at. And I think they asked him to do that. They had never asked Draymond Green to be a lot more than those things are. So I don't know. Is it the Oklahoma City Thunder? Like, what? No, Steph and Clay aren't there, right? You know, so it's I think environment will be really important, and who is coaching him and how they decide to coach him offensively.
I think it sounds like we're probably down on him right now more so than some of the other guys, but like there were, at least for me, still a fair amount of things that I really liked about him. Mm-hmm. I mean, defensively, he was great. Played super hard. Like, he was fun to watch. Yeah. Like, he brought it every game. Like, great motor, and like, just, he was fun to watch because he played his butt off. And so, I don't know. Like, you made the Draymond Green comparison. I bet if we went back and like watched Draymond, we would say the same things about like how hard he played in college, how competitive he was in college, how good he was on defense. Like, those things. Like, he's got some flaws on offense, there's no question, but he does check. Like, there's a reason he's being projected in the lottery, right? There's, mm-hmm. he checks
high in the lottery.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen him as high.
Well, I think part of this, like, if this is us pushing back at all, it's he's starting to show up on draft boards ahead of one or two of those top five guys who, you know, was supposed to be the lock of this is the top five. And I think you see Scottie Barnes over Jonathan Kuminga in as many mocks as you see Kuminga over Barnes, right? He has been elevated in where he is being picked to the point where we're not just talking about a role player, right? If it's the sixth pick, if it's the fifth pick, that, you know, you really want to see a trajectory for him that is going to be something more than just an elite sort of lockdown defender, which I think, for the record, he will be.
Yeah.
One yes. through four, like anybody who's trying to penetrate on the other team, you can put him on him, and you could put Barnes on them, and that's going to put you in a great spot. I think a lot of OG Anunoby in that sort of way. But again, OG Anunoby, like, really good player, but what's he bringing for you offensively? So you don't have this sort of, like, if you're drafting Scottie Barnes to be your first or second best player, you got to look elsewhere. But if you're looking for your OG Anunoby, then I think you got to, you know, you got a player who's probably seems likely to be able to bring that defense, like that man-to-man defense, and maybe can develop a competent enough jump shot to be able to be making open threes, and then you're on your way there.
Well, that's just it. It's, can he be good enough on defense right away to play, get experience, figure out kind of where he fits in, what his offensive game is going to look like, where 2, 3, 4 years he can develop that part of his game? Because I agree. I think defensively, I'm not sure we've, I don't know how many we've done. Like, nobody has had more fun playing defense. Like, loved to play defense. You know what I mean?
So much clapping.
Like, yeah, every time. Like, he was so excited to play defense. And, you know, you add to the fact that he's 6'8 with a long wingspan, good frame, who's that competitive, who loves to play defense. Like, we're talking about a guy who could be an all defensive guy
for sure
early on in his career. You know what I mean? Like, you combine all three. Like, he's got everything you want, everything you look for in a defensive prospect.
I mean, again, and it's a lot like Thybulle a couple years ago, I think, where you have all these questions about, you know, what is he going to be able to, is he going to ever have anything offensively? Is he going to ever be able to make shots? Well, here we are. You're two into Thybulle's career. He's on the all defensive team. And that wouldn't shock me at all from Barnes. But I don't know, where do you think Thybulle was drafted? Like, 17 or something like that. I don't remember off the top of my head, but that's what I'm just kind of, he was drafted in a place where you're like, okay, we are drafting a defensive role player. If you're drafting Scottie Barnes fifth or sixth, I feel like you are banking on that while also looking for something more beyond that. And I don't know what the more is beyond that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if he goes fifth or sixth, whoever takes him must believe in his offense more, you know, a lot, because you're not taking a guy that high to be the Thybulle role. Like, you're just, I don't know.
I'll just say I think it's crazy if anybody takes him over Kuminga. And again, there's a lot of those people who have a lot longer track record and scouting the drafts and stuff. I'm just saying for me, or if you were to say that right now, as my friend who I could like, I'd be like, dude, no. Like, there's just, and maybe it's upside. I don't know.
Like, I know there's been some mock drafts where Barnes has been ahead of Kuminga. I would be shocked on draft night if same. Barnes goes ahead of him. Shocked.
I don't know if it's
smoke. I don't know what the deal like.
And then again, it seems like some of it is, you know, intel on like Kuminga effort and background and stuff like that, which we don't have access to. So I'm just saying, going off of having watched the majority of all these guys' possessions in the G League and at Florida State, it doesn't like check out in my brain how I would choose to take Scottie Barnes over Jonathan Kuminga. The only way in which I could see that happening is if you're in a situation like very specifically like Golden State was last year, where you are trying to take a guy to be in your rotation for a championship team next season.
Purely off fit. Yeah. Not upside or talent. Purely off fit. Or the other thing is if Kuminga's off the court effort, you're just like, we refuse to take him. That's which, again, you and I have.
That is not being factored into our analysis whatsoever.
No, but I'm saying that would be the world in which, right, if a couple teams were like, I don't care if we're at 20, we're not going to take him.
Where, before I move on, like we haven't watched a ton of guys in this class. If you had to guess where Scottie Barnes is going to end up on your big board, where do you think it will be?
See, you mentioned 5 or 6. I kind of like, there's always those couple guys that drop, mm-hmm, and guys who are slotted in at 10 or 11 who ended up going like
Patrick Williams last year.
No, I'm saying who go. Patrick Williams is the opposite.
Oh, okay.
But I'm saying guys who are supposed to be in the ladder who fall out of it. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if this happens with Barnes.
Mm. Like, he goes down?
He goes down.
Interesting. I do think there is just like a fascination and a warranted of like the big wing in the NBA today where I could see a team taking him after these top five guys are gone.
I'm saying that all the home runs. I'm saying that not predicting it. I'm saying I wouldn't be shocked. Mm-hmm. If you told, like, gun to my head, I would say he'll go 7-9.
Sure. Yeah. That's where, I guess what I'm just trying to say is, having watched the film, it's not that I don't like him. It was just before having watched him, I've started seeing his name jump up on these boards and from people who I respect, right? And that, again, it just, I didn't see that level of leap, that level, that caliber of player, you know, on the film that I did watch. But if you are trying to draft an elite defensive role player who you're okay with maybe never being your third or fourth best player, then, you know, by all means, I get it. That would make sense. And it would be fit based and would be, you know, the whatever type of team it is that you're in. But that's where I'm with Barnes. I think that I think the top five will be the top five for me. And I would, just guessing, have one or two players from the rest of this lottery group that I haven't really dug into yet. I'm assuming I'll put one or two of those guys over. So
you would have Barnes ahead of the other two guys we're going to do
today? I would have Barnes ahead of Wagner and Johnson. And with that, we'll take a break.
The NBA Finals are here, and this summer's betting action is heating up with my friends over at BetUS. Looking at some of the odds over at BetUS after Game 4, the Phoenix Suns have now dropped to only slight favorites in the series after that Game 4 win by Milwaukee. The Suns are now -160 win the series, according to BetUS. I believe I said on here after Game 2 that the Suns were all the way up at -480. So the series is definitely shifting, and if you want to bet on it, BetUS has a ton of different prop bets that you can hit. Also, with the UFC, MLB, golf, Summer Olympics, football season all just around the corner, you need a sportsbook. BetUS has the industry's biggest bonuses and every kind of bet type you could dream of. BetUS has been a pioneer in online betting for over 25 years, prides itself on being America's favorite sportsbook. So take advantage of this action-packed summer and sign up today at BetUS.com. That's BetUS.com or 1-800-69-BETUS. Receive a 125% sign-up bonus when you use the promo code Dane, my name, Dane125. If you miss tip-off, forget to bet, you can bet live at BetUS as well. And if you care for some blackjack, there are also hundreds of games in the BetUS casino. I bet at BetUS, and so should you. Join now by calling 1-800-69-BETUS or online at BetUS.com. BetUS, you bet, you win, you get paid.
All right, well, moving on to Franz Wagner, Michigan. There are no real listings. He didn't participate in the combine, so exactly what his height, wingspan, and weight exactly are. He was listed at Michigan at 6'9", 220 this season. Again, nothing on wingspan, so for my little activity of finding player comps, and I said this to you before, I guessed that Wagner's wingspan, because he stands 6'9", was 6'10". Because my logic was that his brother's wingspan, Mo Wagner, was only 1 inch longer than his when he got measured at the combine. So what I did is I looked for players who were 6'9", 220, or like 210 to 220, and had wingspans under 7 feet. The guys I came up with were Cam Johnson. Obviously, we're seeing have a lot of success in these finals. Brandon Clark was 6'8", 6'8". John Collins was 6'9.5", 6'11". Jake Lehman, 6'9", 6'9". George Nyang, 6'8.5", 6'10". TJ Warren, 6'8", 6'10". And then a bunch of white dudes. Doug McDermott, Robbie Hummel, Chandler Parsons, Kyle Singler, and Luke Babbitt.
Checks out.
But Franz Wagner is, for people who haven't watched him, is going to have like kind of the misconception of the Euro white dude who, you know, we typically label as a really good shooter, really poor defender. And Wagner's almost the inverse of that.
Yeah.
He was a really good college defender. Not that he's an elite athlete, but he was a very, very capable college defender, very smart defensively. And if there's anything that really there's questions about in his game, it's his three-point shooting. Shot 34% from three this year on 100 attempts, 31% as a freshman on 132 attempts. So on a pretty large sample, I guess, of shooting and on defense, we've seen, you know, a player who, you know, there's not a lot of statistical evidence to back that he's a shooter. There is a lot of statistical evidence to back that he's was a very good college defender.
Yeah, I mean, you're spot on. I think the perception is, you know, 6'9", Big Ten player, like, going to struggle on defense, but probably shoots it really well. It's not like that at all. Like, he is all three of these guys really, but like, he was unbelievable on defense.
So smart,
plays really hard, really good size. He's not the quickest guy in the world, but he tries super, super hard, and that can make up for a little. He's not slow, but like,
right. But he's also not just a try hard. I feel like sometimes. Yeah. That's just what I could imagine people thinking right now when we're saying that. And they go, okay, try hard Euro dude. Like, is he really going to be able to guard big wings in the NBA? I think the answer is probably yes. Like, they're going to still make shots on him, but.
Why wouldn't he?
Yeah. There is tons of evidence if you watch his defensive film that he is very capable of, you know, holding his own, playing a step ahead defensively. I mean, sometimes you'd see him get banged a little bit once he got closer, like a guy was driving on him, hits him, getting closer to the rim. But, you know, he's not going to get outsmarted defensively, right, in terms of, you know, getting you leaning one way and whatever, those sort of things. Like, Wagner was very competent defensively, but more than that at the same time.
Not only him, Michigan's team in general, their defensive numbers were really, really good. One of the best in the country. And I think, like, it kind of starts with him, right? Just as far as, like, his IQ, how he can communicate, how he can switch, how he kind of anchored that defense.
For sure.
Do you know what I mean? And I think it's not, like, a coincidence that Michigan's defense was really, really good when your best player is your best defender.
So, well, we're going to give him the – he's going to be – competent defensively in the NBA label. What are you seeing from him offensively that, you know, either limits your belief in him or, like, I don't know. I kind of struggled with, what does Franz Wagner look like offensively in the NBA?
Can we back? Did you say, yes, like, you think he'll be more than competent on defense? Are you
saying more than competent.
More than competent. Okay.
At an NBA defense,
yeah,
more than competent.
I think he checks out really well defensively. Yep. He's a little bit like Barnes. I mean, I think he's going to be way above average defender.
Okay.
Offensively, I mean, He didn't shoot it great. I liked the looks of his shot. I thought he was comfortable shooting it. I thought, especially off the dribble, like for his size, like the fact that Michigan ran a fair amount of ball screens for him was when I went back and watched the film, like I'd watch Michigan casually, but like when I went back and watched them, like he was in a fair amount of ball screens, which, you know, Juwan Howard isn't a, you know, he knows what he's doing. So like to put a guy like that in that position, I think speaks to his skill set.
Yeah, it was kind of like a pro style offense.
Totally.
In a lot of ways.
Yeah, and I think he's really smart. I mean, I think like a really, really high end role player on offense, a guy like, you know, I'm trying to think of the finals right now. Who's like that type?
Cam Johnson?
Yeah, like a Cam Johnson.
Like, I mean, Cam Johnson is like knockdown.
He's not going to shoot like Cam Johnson. But a guy
in the finals, like Cam Johnson has been like, been able to attack something. Not just the dunk, but like, you know, be able to be a weapon within the arc as well. And I think, honestly, Wagner probably profiles as being even more than that as an attack. I mean, he could really attack the basket going right. I don't know if I like saw him go left ever. But he really had like in a big body, I thought a really good first step and an ability to get to the rim that I think you will see, in the NBA. It's sometimes he's just got to kind of have that direct line. I didn't like when he started kind of like looping his way to the hoop, like that won't work in the NBA. No. And with that, he's going to have to get like, you know, a set of moves that kind of pivots off of that, right? Where it's, I don't know, combo moves or something like that. It was very like, he was very right-handed. He was very good at it. And if he had a step, he had a crease, he could take it. And I think that same thing will happen in the NBA, but he's got to be able to go left. And then I don't know about the three-point shooting. I really struggled with where I came down ultimately, not just for him as a shooter, but with Keon Johnson as well, of like both of their shots looked better than the amount it went in, like kind of by a lot.
Wagner for sure.
Okay, so you didn't like Johnson's shot. We'll get there with the type cups. So okay, so you're better at this than I am with shots. Like why is Franz Wagner going to be a better shooter than that in the NBA?
I mean, I think
because it's problematic if he's in the league. And he shot 34 this year, 31 the year before. If he's in the league and 2 years in, he shot 34 and 31%, it's like, I'm not sure if that guy's in a rotation.
Right. Did you not like the form? Like, did you not like the...
I don't know. I didn't have a great feel for it.
Because I thought the mechanics are there. Like, I think he's... Like, what... And I know this is maybe not... Probably not a good way to look at it, but like, had you not looked at the percentages... And you just watched all his
shots. I actually
shots.
Did that.
You didn't look at his percentages.
Yeah.
So did you think... Would you
have
bet his percentages were higher than 34 or lower than 34?
Well, it's so I watched all his tournament stuff, like so whatever, the first chunk of film, before I like read any sort of profile and looked at any numbers. And I was like, these are not going in very often. And I think he shot even worse in the tournament probably than like the 34%. But I go, that looks like... a better shot than it is, but it was just kind of consistently, I don't know, just inaccurate. And what I'm kind of gleaning here is that you like the form more than I did.
I like the form. I also like the types of shots he's going to probably get in the NBA. Like he's going to be your fourth or fifth option on offense. So he's going to be like, he's going to get rhythm threes. Like they're not going to ask him to hit. Like he took some deep, tougher shots because he could at Michigan. Like he was the guy. He clearly had the green light. Look, I'm not saying he's going to be a 45%. Like he's not going to be an elite. He's not going to be Scotty Barnes where the defense is of the distance you and I are right now.
Yeah, they're going to guard him. I have a really weird comp for you for him. And this is just like overall. Brook Lopez. Like super smart defensively. Always in the right spot, limiting.
You could have given me 100 guesses. I would not have guessed.
I know, but hear me out. Like, what makes Brook Lopez a really good defender? I know everyone rips on the drop and, you know, playing him and stuff like that. But like, Brook Lopez almost won Defensive Player of the Year a year ago, not because he's like some explosive athlete, but because he's always in position. And you know, Lopez was really big, really high IQ. Not a guy who you want to be one of your top options on your team, but like a fourth or fifth guy who's totally cool with being that fourth or fifth guy. Plus, another part of it is like, to the Wagner point, the shooting, you know, it like it's probably going to vary some, but you wouldn't be surprised if there's a game or a week where Brook Lopez is just kind of like, he's getting a lot of 3-point looks and he's making a lot of them. And then sometimes it's going to go the other way as well. But I think Brook Lopez is a really good example, just in the NBA in general, of a really high level role player, like a really high level role player who gets there with intellect more than anything else. And so different positions, but that's what I'm talking about.
The sentence you said, getting there with intellect, that resonates with that comparison more than anything else, I think. That's in the other
thing. What about the defensive stuff, though? Like the positioning. That is what Wagner's going to be awesome at defensively, is always being in the right place. On ball, off ball.
Yeah, but they switched a lot of Michigan. He guarded guards. Like, Brook Lopez can't play in the finals because he can't. Like,
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I think Wagner, and partly because he's not 7'2",
I'm not talking about them as athletes. You're right. Like, Wagner can guard guards.
But I'm saying, when you say intellect, that makes it like...
Okay.
I think you're not...
Super smart.
You're not wrong. But like, Brook also, like, he can't play in the series. And I don't think there's going to be any teams where Wagner can't play defensively.
That's a good point. And that's a really encouraging bit.
For sure,
right?
Yeah.
And that's kind of...
So you think he's going to be more of a big, like more of a...
No, I don't think he's going to be Brook Lopez. I just... think of them as similar, like, types of players. I think we should get to this. I think Wagner needs to play the three. I think that's where he ends up being an offensive weapon for you, because now he's able to, you know, take guys, a little bit smaller players off the dribble a little bit more, because I think against fours, he's, I don't know if he's going to burst by them. But I think you want to use him on the perimeter a little bit more, and that would free up, you know, more room for him. And the real weapon of his is that I think he's going to be able to guard threes in the league. Like, as we're listing off a bunch of these,
I do too.
These dudes in the physical comps, it's like, particularly when I got to the Doug McDermotts and, you know, like the Chandler Parsons and the Luke Babbitts and stuff like that, like those guys, you know, were competent NBA players for a long time, but always it was a concern, you know, defensively. And he looks a lot like them. He's similar in size to those guys. But I don't think you're going to have to hide Wagner.
Not at all. Even
if you're playing the Clippers. Like, I think, I mean, I don't know. That's about as big of a test as it gets. But most teams, creator, wing, like, I don't think you're bummed out if Wagner gets switched onto him.
No. I think if he's going to have a really good NBA career, the backbone of that is going to be because he's a very good defender. I also think offensively, I think he, guys who are that smart rebound, who I think he's going to rebound pretty well. Mm. Like, he could be a really solid point forward for you. Like, getting defensive rebounds, starting fast breaks.
Right.
Like, and we've talked about this on the podcast before, like, that skill is still somehow underrated.
For sure.
In basketball. Having a guy who can get a rebound and instantly go versus having to kick it to a guard, like, that to me is still incredibly valuable.
Triggering your team to play in transition.
Yeah. And that's where I think, not to compare him to Ant, but that's where, and you watched more Wolves than anybody in the world, but that's partly where Ant took a big step, I thought, where he would get a rebound and he would just
go.
And again, it's not even close athletic, like from an athlete standpoint,
but you can get your three to do that wherever we think.
Wagner was good
be.
At that at Michigan. He was really good at that at Michigan, and I think that will also translate well in the NBA.
And doing it as a player who could go coast to coast but could also pass.
Yeah.
So
he's either Ant or Brook Lopez.
Okay. On that note, we're gonna take another break and move on to Keon Johnson.
Best talent brings out the best in each other. If your company is looking for teammates to take you to the next level, you need Indeed. When hiring gets hard, you need Indeed, the job site that makes hiring incredibly simple. Just attract, interview, and hire. In fact, with Indeed, you can do all of your hiring in one place, even interviewing. Don't just hope your perfect candidate will find you. Indeed's hiring tools help you cut through the noise to hire faster and smarter. In fact, Indeed's Instant Match provides a list of quality candidates whose resumes are on Indeed the moment you post a sponsored job. Indeed Instant Match helps you make a short list of great candidates fast. The moment a sponsor shows up, you get a list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job description. Then you can invite them to apply right then. Indeed helps you hire great people fast. Plus, Indeed takes finding quality candidates even faster with 135 assessments to help make sure you find applicants with the right skills. Best of all, you only pay for applicants who meet your must-have qualifications. According to Talent Nest, Indeed delivers four times more hires than all other job sites combined. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Get started right now with a $75 sponsored credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Get a $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through September 30th. Terms and conditions apply.
All right. Well, our third player is Keon Johnson from the University of Tennessee. He is, in a lot of ways, very similar in stature and athleticism to Jalen Green, who we did before. Almost the exact same height, wingspan, and weight. So a lot of, I just used the same list as the guys we had last time. Ben McLemore, Elfrid Payton, Jordan Clarkson, Malik Beasley, Derek White, Teo Maledon are, you know, recent draft picks who measured 6'5", 6'7", 185. And Keon Johnson is more athletic than all of them, I think, is the place to start. I had a blast watching him. I think I'm just going to go back and watch more because it's insane.
I thought you were going to – he's my favorite guy I've watched so far.
Oh, it's so fun.
It's so fun. He plays – I mean, go ahead. You were going to say something.
No. That's literally what I was going to say is I had the most fun watching him of maybe any prospect we've done this year or last because he's an absolute freak.
He's a freak who we talked about, like, giving a shit, like, that factor for me. Like, that's, like, the first thing I look at. He's a freak athlete who gives a shit, who plays incredibly hard. I don't know if he's going to be good because he's got some flaws, but he, from an entertainment standpoint, when you're that athletic, you care that much, you're that competitive, you play that hard. It's just like anybody who likes basketball would just fun to watch.
Well, he's just the. This is stupid. We were just talking about the pro-am here locally before we started recording, and it's, you know, I'm too old now that I don't know a bunch of the guys who are like college age around here.
It's my last ever game.
Yeah. Right. You're just like, who is this guy who is just so much more athletic than everyone else on the floor? And you know how just as a basketball viewer, that is just fun. I mean, here with the Timberwolves, that was LaVine. You know, just those guys where you're like, man, I'm going to get behind this. This might not work out, but like, this is going to be my guy. Whichever team he goes to, all the fans are going to love Keon Johnson. They're going to have this idea of like, well, if he puts this together, like, I don't know what it looks like, but it's going to be awesome because he's just such an explosive and fun athlete because, like you said, he's not Wiggins, right? Like, he's got the Wiggins athleticism, but the give a shit factor is, you know, is a 10. So I was curious to just like get your opinion on if it works, like, what does it look like? Because I couldn't really figure it out.
MJ?
Stop it.
I mean, so yeah. So to pump the brakes a little bit, like, he
misses all his shots.
That didn't help. You know, he's not a point guard.
No.
He's a small shooting guard.
Who like kind of plays power forward.
Who
stuff.
Can't really dribble. So yeah. Like he's got everything, I guess, intangibly that you want, but the tangibles, it's like, I don't know what he looks like. Maybe, I mean, the
he
one
looks
area,
like a player who's not going to be playing in a rotation next year.
Right. I will say, for as bad as he was shooting threes, he was pretty good in the mid range.
Yeah.
He took some awful shots, but like he was comfortable there. Do you know what I mean?
He so reminded me of that guy when you're playing 21 and he's so good at 21. He's so much better at 21 than he is at actual basketball because he can just get to a shot whenever he wants and is also just like really never afraid to get all the way to the rim and or like to kind of fling up something crazy that goes in by the rim. He had a, like, again, they didn't go in necessarily at a really high rate at Tennessee, but given his athletic package, he had all these different ways of just springing up to the rim and shooting shots. There's so many misses that I was just like, man, does he just not have touch? Because he's raising up above guys. He's there. The ball is just not going in that often. And I don't know I don't know what the answer is. Is that like a fatal flaw? Is he just somebody who was blessed with elite athleticism and does not have, and then comparatively does not have that, you know, that hand-eye coordination sort of gene or whatever that a shooter sort of has? It's the shot was really confusing to me because I didn't think it looked that bad mechanically, whether it was from the mid-range, from around the hoop, or from behind the three-point arc. But, I mean, it's 27% on 50 attempts from three, and it felt like less than 27% of them.
It did. I know. It's – so I was racking my brain when I was watching. I'm like, okay, who – is there any NBA player that kind of fits this? Not a great shooter, but plays his ass off. Good, really, because he's another really good defender. We'll get to that. The one guy, and this is best case, like, you know, high level comparison, was Jimmy Butler.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, just a guy that was not a good 3-point shooter at Marquette, wasn't even that good of offensive player.
Well, and isn't a good 3-point shooter in the NBA.
Right. But was known as a really competitive dude, a dog, a tough dude. Like, checks those boxes, same boxes that Keon Johnson checks. So maybe there is a path for him in that type of thing.
I hadn't thought about, like, this is a super random name. I don't even know if you'll know. I've attended the combine once, and the guy who had the highest vertical leap at that was Jalen Lecque, who he didn't even play in college, I don't think. He did like a JUCO thing and then immediately went to the combine. And he's like kind of been in the – he signed a deal, I think, initially with the Suns. And then – I mean, but he was insane. I watched him do his vertical thing, and he's this like 6'3" dude who's never seen anybody jump that high in person. And then in the court, you know, he's just this freak, explosive athlete. And I remember just everyone there like kind of, you know, talking about him. And then I think it was the Suns ended up signing him to like a 3-year minimum contract, and he went undrafted, but they got him for that, and I'm like, oh, dude, this guy's coming. Nothing ever came of it. And Keon Johnson's the same thing, but at the combine again this year, that he had the best vertical of the group. He is probably the most attractive athlete in a pretty, I don't know, this class is pretty loaded with some athletes in it, but
really loaded.
But he's, I don't know, still like maybe number one athlete of this class.
I'm not sure. I think it's pretty clear cut.
Yeah. I mean, there's different ways, I guess, to define it, but he's got that electrical,
I guess,
athleticism.
It's easy to just think athleticism and think vertical, right? Just like dunks and like,
which, but it's not just that. I mean,
he flies.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Okay. But here's the catch is similar to with Scottie Barnes. He's on some people's boards, like up there, like
he's top higher. 10. He's higher than Barnes on some of them.
I know. KOC has him 6.
Yeah,
but like John Hollinger has him 18 at the Athletic. Vecini has him 17. So it's similar to with Barnes, where you're like, oh my god, I would love to get that guy if I'm outside of the lottery, you know, or something like that, because you know you're just willing to incur more risk at that point, or just, I mean, even just like financially, right? Like, if you're drafting somebody at 18, you're paying them, you know, $3 million a year. Whereas if you're drafting them 6, you're paying them 8, 9, you know, it's a different, you know, value cost to kind of line up here. But this does seem, again, to bring up Patrick Williams again, these are the type of guys the teams are taking shots on. And Johnson does have the physical profile that is very similar to Jalen Green. He's not huge. He's 6'5", you know, and he really looks like he can guard. Like, he's not somebody who strikes me as undersized. You'd like to see him put on a little bit of weight, probably. I think he just turned 19.
Yep.
So, I don't know, I feel like we're all over the place on him.
Which is probably fair, to be honest.
Yeah, I think that maybe that sums him up.
It's funny, because do you ever watch the, like, the Draft Express, like the 12-minute breakdowns?
Yeah, I haven't watched them for these guys.
So, yet. I never watch them first, but I will occasionally, like, watch them at the end just to see, because I think they're well made. Anyways, sure. I did it with all three of these guys at the end. I was like, let's just watch it and see. And all three of their, they always start with strengths, right? They go through these strengths for like 8 minutes and they move on. And all three of these guys' strengths for the first like 5 minutes were all defensive clips. And there wasn't a single guy last year who started on defense. So all three of these guys were just like 5 minutes of like switching a screen and like staying in front of their man. So my point there is like he has got a bunch of question marks on offense. There's no doubt. But like the other two guys, he was an elite defender in college. Really, really good defender. Like we talked about at the start, super competitive. And yeah, it's like I feel like we're kind of repeating ourselves with these three guys. But like if he can figure out his niche on offense, that's where the upside, that's why people have him as high as guys like KOC have him.
So, okay, just three-point shooting, because we were talking about there's different, he's a different type of shooter at like kind of every level. In a weird way, the only place I feel like he was really good was mid-range. Like around the basket, he wasn't great. And from three, he didn't shoot many at all. But I don't know if that's the most, yeah, it's probably the most important of like, if you're going to play shooting guard in the NBA, like what are you going to be as a shooter? I personally, like, I didn't think the mechanics were bad. And it kind of surprised me how rarely they went in. I like convinced myself at one point that he had like the ball blocking one of his eyes or something with it, or like didn't have depth perception, because it's just like, I don't know. I guess what I'm trying to say is I didn't understand why he missed as many jump shots as he did, particularly from three.
The mechanics from this 3-point shot, I think, were fine. The thing that scares me is that his mid-range shot and his 3-point shot were it looked like two different players, right? It looked like his mid-range, he got it way above his head, and it looked fluid.
Yeah, that he had it in front of his face.
Probably why it went in more. And then the three, you're right. It was like a hitch, slower release. It looked like two different shots. So in a vacuum, each on their own, I don't think they're terrible. But the fact that they're that different, like
Good point.
I don't know any good shooters that I could say that about. Do you know what I mean? So that part really, really worries me.
We did say that a little bit last year with Ant. We did.
Yeah.
Or I did. Well, or what I was saying was
off the dribble and catch and shoot were different.
Exactly. But this is almost fully different mechanics. And what I will say of having watched Ant closely this year is that gap. That gap was there at the beginning of the year. You know, was first 15 games of the season. I was like, uh-oh, this is. But the last 20 games of the season, like I thought watching Ant shoot, his off the dribble mechanics were the same as his, you know, catch and shoot mechanics, which is. I'm totally with you there. That's a good answer for it. I also think another reason why Johnson's shot is not going in as often as it seems like it should is I have to imagine there's a lot of athleticism to kind of tame in your exploding up for the shot, right?
Yeah.
He was just kind of a little, I mean, he is an all over the place type of player, and a jump shot is a not all over the place type of action, right? Like that's why I felt like his like floater game where we'd kind of like go up chest to chest with somebody and like finish at the rim when he would do that. That seems so much more natural because I felt like that is more of an athletic act. An open catch and shoot shot is about body discipline. Right. And he doesn't have that yet for sure, but he does have, I don't know, not like Scotty Barnes. I'm not sure he's ever going to shoot. And if he does, it's going to end up being like a super mechanical shot.
I agree with that.
If Keon Johnson, you know, there's a world where I could be like, oh, this guy, like, he's kind of like mid-range game style, like, take you off the bounce sort of thing. He extends out beyond, like Jordan Clarkson style, right? Actually, that's one of his physical comps, you know, where it kind of is like a one of those type of pull-up shooter. And that he never pulled up from three at all at Tennessee. But if he could add on to that, I guess. And maybe I'm being way too optimistic with a player I liked, but
we both like him for reasons having nothing to do with his jump shot, right? Like,
yeah.
But I also think, and we talked about this, we've talked about this with a couple of different of these guys over the last year. He's really young, right?
really young.
He's been...
I think he's going to be the youngest in this class. Yeah. Maybe.
He's been, I'm sure, a freak athlete his entire life, right? So he's never...
I hope so, because if this all came last year...
Yeah, but you know what I mean? So like, I would educate a guess he's been more athletic than most guys since he's been playing basketball. So I think it is... It does take guys like that longer to just get comfortable shooting. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Because everywhere he's been, it's been, let me put my head down, let me jump on a trampoline and try to dunk. And it's the same thing a little bit with Ant. Like, Ant shot the same percentage at Georgia. Obviously, mm-hmm. way more shots. But I had concerns about Ant's shot. I think a lot of people did. He put an end to that, you know, midway through the year this year.
Right.
So my point is, guys like that, guys who fit that mold, super athletic, super talented, really young, who have never needed to rely on their shot, I think those guys take longer. Like Zach LaVine shot better in college than these guys both did, but like nobody would have thought Zach LaVine would be one of the best shooters in the NBA by the time he was in his sixth or seventh year. Yeah, like,
good point.
So I think it's important. And I'm not really, if Keon Johnson never becomes even a decent shooter, that's not going to surprise me. But I do think he's in such a different class athletically and physically that it's going to take him longer than it would somebody else.
And I think the good thing is in that meantime where he's, you know, figuring out his offensive identity, whatever that is, he does have that A-plus motor. And he does, like, he can be a guy that you can just kind of throw in as your, you know, backup two next year and just, you know, just kind of be a chaotic sort of player, right? And in a good way.
Yeah.
Defensively wreak havoc and offensively have him be, you know, somebody you just get out and run with, you know, make sure he's playing next to, you know, a smart point guard who knows how to use him and kind of hone him in. Because if you let him run wild with the ball in his hands as a rookie, I think that'll end up being a mess.
I think you let him run wild by playing defense and crashing the glass and doing all those types of things and see where that takes. Like, see what else he can do after that. Because I do think the other thing, I think from the coaching lens, like, does he give a shit? That's what I look for in, like, the first, like, 10 minutes. The other thing, it's like, do I think he'd be fun to play with as just a basketball player? And even though he takes some awful shots, I think he would be a ton of fun to play basketball with.
100%.
And so those two things, he checks both boxes. So I don't know. No idea if he's going to be good. I love him. I think I'm going to root for him. Like, I think he's, I think you could probably feel the same way.
Totally. It was so funny. Like, I watched these players in the order that we just went through them.
I did the exact opposite.
Oh, really? And it was funny. I watched a bunch of Wagner, and then I turned on Keon Johnson. I'm like, this is different. it was fun. Not that I probably would bet on, I don't know, Wagner has a higher floor than Johnson does. I think
so.
There's
how would you stack rank the three we just did?
I haven't really thought about it in that sort of way. I'm thinking about them all very differently. Like, Wagner and I feel very confident in being a rotation.
Highest player. Four.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And I don't know, like, what the Warriors have, like, 14 or something like that. You know, plug him in as your...
He's the guy that would get minutes for them next year.
Exactly. So there's that attractiveness to it. I think Barnes would be the top for me of these three because... I do see a Thibault future for him, an Anunoby type of future for him defensively. I definitely don't think he's on the same trajectory yet as Anunoby is offensively, or even the shooter yet that Thibault is. And Thibault's not a great shooter by any means, but I think I would bet on that player because there's some upside there, some upside potential. And then for Wagner versus Johnson, for me, would be, you know, am I trying to have the known player for next year, fit wise? You know, if I'm the Warriors at 14, I take Wagner. But I think for the majority of their teams, mid to late lottery,
try to hit a home run.
Yeah, try and hit a home run with Keon Johnson. If you got, again, it's going to be so much about what system are you developing him in?
Totally.
How are you developing him? Which players is he playing around? I think that's so important for a player like this, because I think Keon Johnson, I mean, raved about his defense a lot too. He's got a lot to like learn mechanically on that end, reading that floor, reading the floor in that sort of way, reading the floor offensively. Like, he's got to be coached. And that, you know, a lot of times organizations don't do that well, right? So there's this, he has his own floor there. There's a bad, you know, hope the Kings don't take him, right? So yeah, I guess that's a very long way of saying I think I would go Barnes, Johnson, Wagner, but situationally, could see Wagner if I just wanted to have a player who I felt confident being productive, like on the rookie deal right away.
Yeah. No,
same for you.
I don't know. I think it's, I mean, I agree with everything you said.
I think you want to go Johnson one.
Maybe. Barnes' shot, I think, it worries me the most of the other two offensively.
It's like really bad.
It's really bad. And so, I mean, I would, so is Keon Johnson's. I think I would buy stock in Keon Johnson's before I would buy stock in Barnes's. Mm-hmm. I don't know, man. I think
it's what,
you could talk me in any which order, honestly.
Because
I think part of me is like, I think Wagner's floor is really high. Mm-hmm. So in a vacuum, like blank roster, I would maybe take Wagner. Hmm. Kind of knowing what you're going to get. Wow. Again, you could, it depends.
We'll come back and do this with a lottery type of big book. Because that is a different, when I'm just watching these guys, I'm just taking notes on what are they offensively, what are they defensively, how big are they? And I don't necessarily like think about them as a prospect grade. So every time we kind of stumble over this, well, how do we rank them at the end, which is ultimately, I guess, what it's about if you're a team is deciding what your big board is. But I think, like,
how many Keon Johnson House of Highlights dunks will we get next year?
Six from the G League.
Six from Turkey.
Summer League. I will, whatever team he's on, I will, he's be on his first summer league game.
Just wait. When does summer league start? Month?
August 8th. Yep.
He will have.
If you don't want to watch his highlights, but you're on Instagram,
within
his
first two games, I bet you, I would make a bet with anybody that he has some sort of House of Highlights.
100%. 100%. All right. He's Will DeBerg. You can follow him on Twitter at WDeBerg14. I'm Dane at Dane Moore MBA. If you missed my other two episodes this week, I had Britt Robson on yesterday. We talked about game four of the NBA Finals and also just kind of watching the playoffs through a Wolves lens. You can check that one out. And then I did an episode by myself just kind of checking in on all the Timberwolves players who are playing in the Olympics. So, yeah, thanks for listening to all these this week. I'll be back with Will next week. I don't know who we're going to do, but we'll choose some new players. Until then, he's Will. I'm Dane. Peace out. How I'm feeling, man, I hope it never stop, yeah. Green and hot so you can find me in the crowd, yeah.